From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ed Morin with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, June 17th, 2020. An outbreak of COVID-19 at the Maine Veterans Home in Scarborough is over. Maine Center for Disease Control Director Dr. Nirav Shah says the outbreak has sickened 63 staff and residents, 14 of whom died. During Wednesday's briefing, Shah also announced a cluster of 5 cases at the Cape Seafood Processing Facility in Saco, but he says it appears the virus did not spread at the workplace.
The individuals in question who I noted all happened to carpool together, and that appears to be the common factor that they all share, and it also appears to be the locus of where their transmission occurred.
Across the state, the CDC reported 17 new cases today and one additional death in a man in his 70s from Cumberland County. That brings the total number of deaths to 102 and total cumulative cases to 2,836. A measure in Portland to remove 2 school resource officers from the city's schools brought out dozens of parents, students, and teachers Tuesday night. Supporters argue that school resource officers don't make schools safer and pointed to research showing that schools with SROs have more arrests with a disproportionate impact on students of color. In recent weeks, schools in several other cities have decided to end their relationships with local police departments in the wake of protest over police brutality and racial injustice. But a few parents and officials push back against the resolution. Board member Marnie Morioni said she'd like to see what safety plans would be in place before voting to remove school resource officers from schools.
But I need personally to be able to say to students, as parents and community members, what is coming in the place of that? What can they expect?
The school board will likely vote on the resolution at a special meeting later this month. The federal government has awarded the state of Maine nearly $1.5 million to support mental health and substance abuse treatment plans. In the weather, tonight, partly cloudy over the northern third of the state, clear elsewhere, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, mostly sunny statewide, highs in the upper 70s to low 90s, warmest in the interior south. Businesses, including gyms, nail salons, and dine-in services at restaurants, were able to reopen today in 3 southern Maine counties. Earlier this week, Governor Janet Mills announced that the industries could reopen in York, Cumberland, and Androscoggin counties, which have seen the most COVID-19 cases in the state. At the Gridiron Restaurant and Sports Pub in Lewiston, owner Sean Martin says he was excited to reopen to dine-in customers this morning after months of uncertainty. Martin says the pub looks very different, with only 6 stools at the bar instead of 20, and a new outdoor dining area underneath a tent which opened earlier this month. While Martin says it cost about $20,000 to transition to the new setup, he's optimistic that it will allow him to stay afloat.
I can see it working and being a decent thing. I'm hoping to be able to get between indoor and outdoor back to about 75%, which is doable and livable.
But Martin remains concerned about a potential second wave of the virus that could force the business to shut down again. Gyms, tattoo parlors, and nail salons in the 3 counties were also allowed to reopen today, and tasting rooms and bars can reopen for outdoor service. Similar businesses in other parts of the state were allowed to reopen last Friday.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Modern Pest Services, committed to offering eco-friendly pest control solutions. Learn more at modernpest.com.
On the next Maine Calling, a summer of virtual events. I'm Jennifer Rooks. All over Maine, some of the big festivals, fundraisers, and other events are going all virtual. We'll talk with organizations about the creative ways they are involving people remotely and the vital role events play in driving Maine's economy. Maine Calling, Thursday, live at 1 and rebroadcast at 7. On Maine Public Radio.
For more than a week, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont have been encouraging travel around northern New England as a step toward reviving their tourism-dependent economies suppressed by the pandemic. But as Fred Bever reports, where exactly you hail from can make a big difference in your ability to move freely about.
Last week, Maine Governor Janet Mills threw open the doors for New Hampshire and Vermont residents to visit and stay in Maine without any sort of quarantine.
As you look at the data, the three states have similar health outcomes.
Heather Johnson is Maine's Commissioner of Economic and Community Development. With case rates that have generally been much lower than urban areas in New England, and with daily case rates declining in all three states since mid-May, Johnson says it made sense for Maine to revise the rules.
Once you get outside of the three states, it's a pretty big difference. And so it became clear that that was a logical breakpoint.
Unlike Maine, New Hampshire isn't making distinctions among travelers from northern or southern New England or anywhere else. Mike Summers is president of the New Hampshire Lodging and Restaurant Association.
The current policy is that New Hampshire residents are welcome to move about the state freely, stay in lodging properties, etc. Out-of-state visitors are required to essentially attest that they have been isolated at home for 14 days.
Lodging operators are asked to get guests to sign a document attesting that they've met the standard and don't have any symptoms.
It certainly presents challenges, don't get me wrong. I think that, this time of year, all of us northern New Englanders certainly enjoy having, out-of-state visitors. It's a big part of our local economies. And so these businesses are legitimately trying to figure out ways to navigate this.
That makes New Hampshire hotel and campground operators the envy of some of their counterparts in Maine, where most out-of-state visitors are barred until the very end of this month. Tina Hewitt-Gordon is the general manager of Kennebunkport's seaside Nonantum Inn. She says every time the state adjusts its travel rules, southern Maine sees a rash of cancellations.
And the long-term effect is just devastating, because then what happens next year when they go to make their travel reservations, they say, hey, wait a minute, we really had a great time in New Hampshire. Let's not go to Maine anymore. Let's go to New Hampshire.
Hewitt-Gordon is also steamed that Massachusetts, where COVID-19's statewide toll has been monstrous compared to Maine's, is asking lodgings there for less. Everybody, she says, is fleeing for Cape Cod.
They have no enforcement. They're required to advise people that they need to quarantine for 14 days. They don't have to have any kind of compliance form. They have none of those restrictions. Chatham Bars Inn booked 4,300 room nights in the last 21 days.
It's actually grown, actually. We've booked just under 6,000 room nights in the last 28 days. 6,000.
Gary Thulander is managing director of the Chatham Bars Inn on Cape Cod, where he says there's been a surge in bookings since Massachusetts opened hotels back up on June 5th. Competing resort towns, he points out, have more restrictive rules.
Us having an advisory versus a mandatory, unfortunately, puts other states at a disadvantage. I mean, I've talked to some of my peers in those states, and they are very nervous. They have very little room nights on the books, and I feel pretty badly for them, to be honest with you.
Vermont, meanwhile, is taking the most targeted approach among the New England states. Travelers from counties in New England and New York, where infection rates are below 400 cases per million, are free to visit Vermont without restriction. But those from counties where infection rates are higher must follow specific quarantine or testing rules. Vermont's Department of Financial Regulation publishes an interactive, color-coded map that shows infection rates by county in the entire region. Mike Pichek is its commissioner.
Just like Maine, Vermont is a big tourist destination. So we thought by sort of going at a more granular county-by-county level, we could open up our map more fully and actually welcome more people in and do that sort of in a safe manner.
Hoteliers in Vermont have complained that all but one of Massachusetts counties are so-called quarantine counties. That's where there are more than the 400 cases per million cutoff, as is the case in most of New York State below Albany. But Pichek says that since the rule was adopted 2 weeks ago, the number of non-Vermonters who could travel to the Green Mountains with no restrictions grew from 3.6 million to 4.6 million. He acknowledges that the potpourri of travel policies around the region can seem frustratingly arbitrary.
One of the outcomes of limited federal leadership is that states are well positioned to create policy for themselves. But then when you start looking at how do these policies interplay with each other in a region, it can get very complicated.
Maine Economic and Community Development Commissioner Heather Johnson says state officials did consider an approach that would attempt to sort out visitors from low or high caseload areas. They opted instead for what seemed simpler rules for industry to follow. But she adds that as the effort to reopen continues, they continue to examine all options. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And you can see Vermont's clickable map of the region's COVID infection rates county by county at our website, mainepublic.org. Brunswick attorney and former Democratic Speaker of the House John Richardson is being remembered as a skilled and thoughtful politician and advocate for workers who wasn't afraid to reach across the aisle during a contentious time at the State House. Richardson died of an apparent heart attack Tuesday at the age of 62. Mal Leary has more.
Democratic Governor Janet Mills was early in her career as a member of the House of Representatives in 2005 when Richardson was elected Speaker. He named her to the Budget Writing Appropriations Committee and worked with her on a number of major issues, including elimination of a $1 billion budget deficit. Mills says Richardson's skill as a negotiator was impressive as he worked to pass legislation while the House was evenly split between the two major parties.
At one point in time, the votes in the House were basically tied, and he had to really negotiate hard. I think he demonstrated his negotiating skills that were just way above par.
Mills says Richardson could be partisan and strongly support the Democrats' position on some key labor issues like retirement benefits for first responders. But Mills says his strong advocacy did not stop him from making friends of all political persuasions.
He was the king of fraternization in a sense. He was very adept at finding common interests with other people.
In addition to serving as Speaker of the House, Richardson was appointed Commissioner of the Department of Economic and Community Development during the Baldacci administration. Former Democratic Governor John Baldacci said he was a dedicated public servant and thoughtful political commentator whose wit and wisdom will be missed. Attorney and former Republican State Representative Josh Tardy served as the House Minority Leader while Richardson was Speaker. Tardy says Richardson could fight hard, even use harsh language in debate, but they were still friends.
We could fight politically and then actually get together for a debrief at night in a social setting and laugh about it. And, you wish there were more of that in politics nowadays.
Richardson sought the party nomination for governor in 2010. He survived by his wife, Dr. Stephanie Grose, and three adult children. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow afternoon at 1 for Maine Calling, which takes a look at virtual events. I'm Ed Morin.